KALW.
From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
Hi, I'm from North Beach.
I'm from Pacific Heights.
I live at 24th and Valencia.
I live in the Outer Sunset by the beach.
Coming up, we're looking to the future of sex ed, and of course, it involves tech.
There was this huge gaping hole in the middle of Planned Parenthood and Pornhub.
Then we'll hear from a local Filipinx artist about how the trauma of colonization drove her to connect with indigenous traditions.
The big framework around my art practice is that it's a way for me to get to know the stories that my parents either don't want to tell or have forgotten.
And for this week's audiograph, we're going somewhere that's unusually quiet.
The stillness and the silence allow me to recognize what's going on in the undertone.
Where is that? Find out coming up today on Cross Currents. Today, we're continuing our two-part series on sex ed. Yesterday, we heard a story that gave us the history behind how sex education evolved in California. And now we're looking to the future. And of course, it involves tech. Adults who missed out on quality sexual education are turning to apps to learn about sex. KLW's Joanne DeLuna met the women behind these sexual wellness startups and has this story.
It's Tuesday night at Old School's headquarters in Oakland. Old School claims to be a judgment-free multimedia platform where adults can learn about sexuality through live streams, articles, and anonymous online chats. I watch an employee prepare the set for a live stream.
These are some nice LED light kits that we have. We want to make sure that as the sun goes down and our lighting changes, that Q's face will be nice and evenly lit for our audience.
About once a week, one of Old School's more than 50 pleasure professionals lead hour-long educational live streams. These are Old School's doctors, therapists, licensed sexologists, and dating coaches, each with over a decade of experience. And there are dozens around the country. Topics encompass anything from simple kissing techniques to navigating sex after childbirth or sexual abuse.
And what's the topic for today?
Non-monogamy! Yeah!
Polyamory, whatever you'd like to call it.
Being in love with more than one person.
That's Q Wilson, today's pleasure professional. He takes his laptop and nestles on a couch among pillows with boob and vagina designs. Q struggles to log into the website because he forgot his password.
Technology can be wonky sometimes, but when it works, then you get to do stuff like live stream to the world talking about non-monogamy as a person who is queer identified, person of color. It's really, really cool.
Once up and running, about 30 users trickle in online anonymously or with a screen name. Wilson can't see them, but they can see him, blonde, mohawk, and all.
Hey, Justin, how are you? It's a long time no see. I miss you. If you haven't already logged into, hey, Dean. is that Canadian Dean? Because that would be kind of fantastic.
What Wilson likes about Old School is that the sex experts are culturally diverse. Regardless of how people identify or where they are in the world, they can log in and see themselves reflected in a pleasure professional. The person responsible for that concept is Old School CEO Andrea Barica. They call us dirty 'cause we break all your rules down. Barica, a queer Filipino woman and former venture capitalist, grew up Catholic in Folsom, a conservative town in Sacramento County.
I definitely had questions about my sexuality, but I was very scared about what that would mean, considering I was told in church and, you know, in my family that homosexuality was a sin and sex before marriage was a sin. So I really turned off those questions.
Barica went through adolescence trying to avoid sex, even thoughts about sex.
I was well into my 20s before I saw my genitals the first time. That's how seriously ashamed I was. My dad worked in technology, and so I was sure that if I Googled anything, he would know.
Barica did what she calls the good girl thing. She graduated high school, went to college, and married her high school sweetheart. They had been together since they were 15, but after 4 years of marriage, her now ex-spouse transitioned to female.
It was a very elucidating and affirming experience. And when she came out to me, we cried tears of clarity. We were two queer women all along, and we just found each other and we survived together.
During this period, Barika finally started asking questions about her sexuality, but there was little information out there.
There was this huge gaping hole in the middle of Planned Parenthood and Pornhub.
Barika saw a business opportunity. She eventually quit her job and launched O School in 2017. Today, O School's content has been accessed by people in more than 100 countries. After the U.S., India is the second most active country. And the site is free for users because private investors fund it. Barika is part of a growing sexual wellness market that includes sex toys, condoms, lubricants, and other pleasure-enhancing products. The industry is expected to hit $37 billion by 2022. So, more online sexual wellness companies have sprouted, like Juicebox. Live fast, die young, bad girls, do it well. Live fast, die young, bad girls, do it well. I catch Juicebox CEO Brianna Rader right before she eats lunch at her home office in San Francisco. Rader is wearing a short-sleeve, black button-down shirt with Wild Feminist printed all over it and her signature dark blue frame glasses. Radar describes Juicebox as a sex therapist in your pocket. For $24 a week, users get paired with professional sex and relationship counselors in the iOS app. Juicebox 40,000 users anonymously text their questions to one of the 150 available counselors, and the professional responds the next day. Like Barika, Radar is queer and also grew up in a small town, Knoxville, Tennessee.
It's actually illegal in the Tennessee public school system to teach anything beyond abstinence. If you do, the teachers get fined.
In college, Rader started a small organization in Tennessee. It held a week of sex education for college students. But she says Tennessee lawmakers found it controversial because it focused on pleasure and was LGBTQ inclusive.
God forbid I exude confidence and enjoy sex. Do you think I relish the fact that I have to act?
The state defunded her organization, and the Tennessee House of Representatives passed a bill legally condemning it.
I realized for the first time that maybe I don't want to work in school systems or public policy, but then I was drawn maybe to be more of a practitioner.
After leaving Tennessee, Rader got her master's degree at UCSF in Global Health Sciences, and later started Juicebox in 2016. Adults like 28-year-old Evan Conaway use this app. Let's talk about sex, baby. Let's talk about you and me. Let's talk about all the
good things and the bad things that may be. Let's talk about sex. So here's more or less what it looks like. So they're just like, it's like a standard like text messaging app.
I'm back in Oakland at Conaway's kitchen table, and he shows me how to maneuver through Juicebox. Conaway began using Juicebox after a couple of breakups that made him feel so unconfident that he started having erectile issues. The app was more affordable than going to therapy, and he preferred it over taking pills.
It seemed at first like it might be a robot, but it became more clear that this is a real person.
Conaway's Juicebox counselor helped him process his breakups and advised him to do more things that made him feel confident, like exercising and trimming his beard before dates.
These are just like small things that are really easy to do that did eventually, over the course of like a month, build up my self-confidence enough that I don't really have the same kind of problem that I had before. If I had another issue like this come up, I would definitely go back.
What do the experts think about these types of sex ed platforms? I asked Rosalia Lopez, a sexual health teacher for the San Francisco Unified School District.
On a personal level, I think that's great. As a health educator, I think that's something that our adult community needs. And I am of the theory that education is throughout our life, and it should not stop just because you stop the formal education.
While helpful and credible, Juicebox and O School are new, and they're working out the kinks. For instance, O School is still building its content. One user I spoke with noted that there isn't enough content on asexuality. Conaway, the Juicebox user, wishes the app's forums were better organized by topic. His biggest critique, though, was that he felt an initial sexuality assessment questionnaire was heteronormative.
Like when it asked me whether I had anal sex, I was like, yes, smiley face.
The question surprised him after marking he was a gay male on the form. Radar heard his concerns, and Juicebox quickly fixed the issue by creating various versions of the questionnaire, depending on the user's sexual orientation. Both companies are actively listening to users and working on it. After all, this is just the beginning, and there's much work to be done. Back at O School's headquarters, O School's pleasure professional, Q Wilson, is wrapping up the live stream session on non-monogamy.
Thanks so much for hanging out with me. I appreciate all the questions, and I hope to hang out with you guys again soon. Take care.
Yay! That was so great.
In the future, CEO Barika said O-School content will remain free, but be supported by selling sex toys on the site. It's also experimenting with sponsorship opportunities.
Eventually, there are many ways that we plan to make money, but right now we are just laser focused on building a trusted brand and being a great resource.
Juicebox is also advancing. In April, it launched Slutbot, a free chatbot for users to practice sexting. They're also transitioning away from an actual app to users receiving coaching and sex tips through SMS. Apps and websites are the new norm now, but in the future, sex education may be even more tailored and privately accessible than ever before. In Oakland, I'm Joanne DeLuna for Cross Currents.
That was part two of a series on sexual education by Audio Academy fellow Joanne DeLuna. And if you didn't catch part one, it's online at klw.org. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba. Artist and educator Kimberly Acebo Artecha grew up in Maryland, where she didn't see a lot of other Filipinos in the mostly white schools she went to. Her family passed down their traditions at home, but there weren't a lot of other resources to help Kim go deeper to learn more about her heritage. While studying art at San Francisco State, she explored the impact that colonialism had on identity and found that art was a way to connect to the indigenous Filipino traditions she'd never learned about. Kim's work is being featured in the new Cool Arts exhibit called Post-Colonial Survival Kit. She sat down with KALW's True Gwynn to share more about it.
The big framework around my art practice is that it's a way for me to get to know the stories that my parents either don't want to tell or have forgotten. My art practice is a decolonizing practice. It's a way for me to just understand it better, you know. I can ask my parents these questions. I can keep asking them about the experiences, but in a very large way, like I want these experiences to take up space, like physical space in the world. My parents really pushed me into academics. So I was like taking two science classes every year, taking two English classes every year, like, you know, the classic
model
academic
minority
courses. Exactly. So, you know, when I would go home, I'd finish my homework, I'd go online, go on forums, and like teach myself how to make vector illustrations, and I'd probably be up to like 2 a.m, like chatting with friends, like, how do I do this? Like, how do I build a website? Things like that.
What did you make? What kind of images did you create at this time?
There were really just like vector illustrations of like Alicia Keys and like Jeremy Passion, like singers, mm-hmm. just people that I admired. 3 years into undergrad, I had changed my major from biology pre-med to pharmacy to nursing. And it was in that last year of nursing where I had a nursing internship and I kind of just hated being bossed around by doctors. Mm-hmm. So I was like, you know what? I've always loved art. This is something that I wanted to do for a really long time. Why don't I just take a semester off, take one nursing class, take one art class. I ended up like not showing up to the nursing class anymore. And I was like, no, this is it. And I was really scared. I thought my mom was going to kick me out of the house.
Wow.
Because, you know, how old was I? I was maybe like 20, 21, something like that. And up until then, I was like doing my best to pursue these expectations and these dreams that my mom and dad had for me. So I was really worried about disappointing them or not being successful. When I was contemplating going back to grad school, I was speaking with Dr. Theo Gonzalez, and he said, go to San Francisco. That's where everything is happening. That's where Filipino-American arts is really flourishing. And I listened, and I went.
What have you found since you've been here?
A really amazing, strong, and resilient community with really rich history of like over 100 years now.
What did you focus your graduate studies on?
Yeah, I applied and I was accepted into the photo area. My advisor said, don't do photo. Like, what else can you do? What else? What other things that are within your bucket that you can kind of apply conceptually? At this point, I was getting really homesick, right? So I'd talk to my mom every week, if not every other day, whether it be like asking for recipes and how to cook certain things or just like ask her questions about her life and growing up in the Philippines. And she really casually one day was like, well, you know, I learned how to weave when I was a kid. This is something that we all learned. And I was like, well, this is really confusing because for my whole life, I thought that art wasn't something that our family did. And so I kind of felt like, oh, this is something that I missed out on. And so a lot of my research between my second and third year, I went back to the Philippines, went to Baguio, went to Benguet, and went back to my mom's province to learn about their weaving traditions and figure out if that was something that I could incorporate into my practice.
Okay, so let's talk about your work that you're doing. You're a multidisciplinary artist, so you work in different mediums.
Mm-hmm.
Was there ever a time where you just wanted to focus on one sort of medium?
So my undergrad degree was like studio lighting, alternative processes, like dark room. And I think at some point there are limitations to each medium. You know, there might be something more complex that you want to express. This last piece that I made for the show that's up at the Luggage Store Gallery right now is made with all mosquito nets, and those were sourced through my parents. Like, I asked them to pick some up from the Philippines in the last trip, and then they just sent it over to me.
It's almost like, you know, our privilege growing up in America, having multiple identities, it's almost like we're a microphone for these voices that live back there in a way.
Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely a huge privilege to be able to carry that, and also a responsibility. One of the last nights when I was there on the tribal tour, I asked them, like, yo, hey, be real with us. I was speaking to the elders, like, are you worried that we're just going to go and take your culture and it'll be removed from you?
And look, I'm an artist.
Right.
That's so cool.
Exactly. So, but one of their big things is, well, at the same time, you remember who we are, because even in the Philippines, they're forgotten peoples. So as long as we take that responsibility of pointing it back towards them, I think we've been able to like strengthen those relationships and be respectful. At the base, the most common Filipino-American experience is of one with an identity crisis. Like, many of us don't know what it's like growing up. Mm-hmm. Many of us don't know how far we've gone from indigenous traditions.
Can you describe the work that you have in this exhibit, the post-colonial survival kit?
Yeah. So it's this large dress made out of mosquito net. The top half is shaped like with butterfly sleeves, like the Terno dress. And I also have installed these like glow-in-the-dark Santo Niño figures. So if you're not familiar with the Santo Niño, it's this like figurine of baby Jesus, one that was given to the royalty of Cebu during Spanish colonization. So they're kind of like floating around as if they were like mosquitoes or fireflies, like kind of hovering around this like big tent-like dress.
And it sounds beautiful.
Yeah. So, you know, it's kind of a literal take on like what is survival. And one of those experiences of like going to the Philippines and like being bitten and eaten by mosquitoes, like no matter how much bug spray you put on, or no matter like even if you are sleeping under the mosquito nets, you still get eaten up so much. And there's also those different layers of like, okay, I try to make this really structural dress out of mosquito net, which doesn't really take any structure. So the idea of the American dreams of like wanting to be this thing, this person, this woman of a specific class that would wear this kind of dress, like it's really hard to force structure on a fabric that's so delicate. The Filipino community has such a struggle with being visible, with like taking up space, with making space. And Cool Arts and Undiscovered have really approached what that looks like with the resources that they have. So Undiscovered is this really wonderful festival, like, you know, a whole summer season of monthly festivals where they literally block off streets and the Filipino community is visible and people want to be part of it. They want to eat the food. They want to see the music. They want to see all of the art. And so it's grown so much with even in the last 5 years since I've been here. I think I had gone my whole life trying to figure out what being an artist and what being a Filipino-American artist was like. And to come here and to witness it and be part of it and help it move has been like a full realization of my whole life.
Left him on a Tuesday, found him on a Sunday.
That was artist and educator Kimberly Acebo Artecha speaking with KLW's True Gwynn. You can catch Kim's work this Friday at the closing reception of the Post-Colonial Survival Kit exhibit. It happens at the Luggage Store Gallery in San Francisco.
Around me, rallied up the troops so we could find a Spanish army. It was time to stop the crying, time to start the fighting. Love was the beginning, but my people steady dying. And so I promised them the same thing, Gabriella Blast in the name of the Philippines. I can hear them in the back of my mind, it said.
This is Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. And it must be Thursday because it's time for an audiograph. And we're going to a place where sound is shaped by a devotion to silence. KLW's David Boyer takes us to a sacred spot near Muir Beach.
Green Gulch is a Zen practice center and organic farm in Marin County, just north of the Golden Gate Bridge. I am Catherine Gammon. My priest name is Yuji Hoshin, and it means courageous word, liberating heart. I am on staff at Green Gulch. I think it's a combination of sounds that would make it specifically Green Gulch that you're hearing. We are silent from the end of the night until silence is broken at breakfast. So the sounds are communicating about schedules, basically. There's a wake-up bell. It's a specific bell, and somebody's job in the morning is to get the bell, and there's a little ritual in the Zendo where you bow and light a candle and go around Green Gulch ringing the bell. And there's a drum that indicates the hour, and then a bell that indicates the portion of the hour. So there are patterns to the sound. They're not music exactly, but they have patterns, and the patterns communicate. They're like a language of sound. The umpan, which is a big flat gong that hangs outside the dining room, rings before all meals to announce that it's time not only to come to the dining room, but if you're in the dining room, it's time to... Everybody stands up formally and waits for the end of the umpan before going to take their food. We're silent as we get our meals and take our seats, and then there's a sound signal of a clap, clap with wooden sticks that tells us now it's time to speak. Zen, in particular, emphasizes meditation practice. And meditation is silent. When you sit still and silent, and there's no particular stimulus, maybe there's a bird or somebody coughing, but basically there's not a lot of input. You might get a little input of like pain from your knee or discomfort from a bad dream or from something you did yesterday that you don't feel so good about or something you're hoping for that you have a fantasy about, all kinds of things. You get to notice this activity of mind that normally, if you're in the midst of activity, you're not really paying attention to, but it is going on. So the stillness and the silence allow me to recognize what's going on in the undertone, what's the hum, you know, that is coloring my experience of the world. It's not the kind of restless silence of being alone and wanting to have company. It's the silence of really being receptive and tuning in.
That piece was produced by KLW's David Boyer. If you want to visit Green Gulch, there's some upcoming events you can go to. Find the information at klw.org. And also, while you're there, make sure you're subscribed to our Cross Currents newsletter. This music is by the Live Oaks from Oakland. They're playing at the Starry Plow in Berkeley tomorrow night.
A bottle of booze, a pack of cigarettes, that's all she wanted at the store. I said, girl, you better relax before they find you dead on the floor.
Today's Cross Currents team includes Janae Darden, Kristen McCandless, Marissa Ortega-Welt, Porfirio Rangel, Lisa Wang, and Eli Wertschafter. Our engineers are James Rollins and Tariq Foda. Content manager is Shirin Adil. Our managing editor is David Boyer. Deputy news director is Angela Johnston. News director is Ben Trefney. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.
Feel the rhythm of the wind, your skin is soaking in warmth. Let's pretend like we've never sinned as we escape up north.